32 supervisors present, that is a quorum. I will call us to order and ask us to join in the Pledge of Allegiance. First item on our communications and announcements from my report is to thank Supervisor Hampson and Supervisor Burns for agreeing to co-chair the downsizing work group. There are a number of people who have either asked or agreed to serve on that. I would say if anybody else who I haven't talked with already is interested in that, will you please let me know tonight so that that group can get started. The chairs will be convening that meeting and starting to set a schedule for their work. And they will be using the brainstorming list that we created from our policy planning meeting last month as the basis for that. Also, a reminder, anybody have any questions on that? Supervisor Fian.
I remember reading something about that, but could you just elaborate a little bit as to what the task is?
The task is to take a comprehensive look at what it will mean for the county board to move from 35 supervisors to 29, look at committee structure, tweaking any modifications that need to be made. There'll also be some housekeeping as it relates to ordinances that might need to be modified as a result of those changes. Is that enough? Yep, Supervisor Geary.
When they set the meeting times, are they going to put that on the website so we know when they're meeting?
Yep, they'll be posted, you bet. Supervisor Schrader.
Does this group have a size?
A finite size? Yeah. The work group?
Yes.
No. If you're interested, if you want to talk to me afterward, that would be great. There are some folks who have already done that, so thank you. Expense reports, two reminders on this. One is that we are running out of money in the county board budget, and it's October. So I am asking that if you have any expenses, some of you choose to wait until the end of the year to submit those. That's making me a little nervous right now because we are so tight on money. So if you haven't already done so and your intent is to wait until the end of the year, will you please modify that plan and submit in the next week or so the expenses that you've incurred up to this point so we really have a much better handle on whether or not we're going to need to go to plan B or C on expenses. And to ask that anybody who is making any plans to attend a conference to incur travel expenses, that you make sure that I know about that so that we can make sure, again, that we're not completely running out of money. That is actually what our ordinance says, and I think we've looking to see if former Chairman Doyle is listening. But there's been some some lacks in the interpretation of those ordinances. And so I'm asking that you check with me if you know you're going to incur, I would say, anything over probably $50 at this point because we are tight on money. And just a reminder to maybe look through those ordinances. We will be doing a bit of a review of them when we look at the county board budget at executive committee also. But just a heads up to everybody, asking you to make sure that you are following those ordinances and try not to spend any more money if we can avoid it. Supervisor Doyle.
My recollection is that the prior chair never had problems running out of money.
I would also note that it is October and the majority of the expenses for the calendar year 11 were incurred prior to July of this year. So just please be paying attention to that. Any other questions on that or snide remarks? Supervisor Geary.
Well, I was in compliance because four of us rode together to the WCA. So only one person submitted mileage. It would be Mr. Schrader.
I'm sure that will be double-checked by Ginny and Dolores to make sure. Thank you. And just a reminder on the public hearing that we have in advance of our regular meeting next Thursday, the 20th, that the public hearing on the ordinance on the open carry of weapons or firearms in county buildings will be held at 5 o'clock down in B190. And we surely want to hear from people who need to be heard on that, but a reminder that it will be a very, very narrow scope of discussion, that it only is about the ordinance. It will not be a public hearing on the merits of that piece of legislation. It will simply be on the ordinance that's being proposed. So as you are talking to folks in the community, you might want to reinforce that point as well. Supervisor Bina.
The question is, are you going to allow everybody from the state of Wisconsin or Minnesota and Iowa to participate in that discussion? Because a lot of the emails I've been getting are way from outside of our area.
Well, Adam... Yeah. At a minimum, we'll be giving preference to La Crosse County residents. I'm not sure that we can prevent others from speaking. And we have a meeting scheduled at 6 o'clock following it. So, I mean, that will confine us somewhat. Supervisor Hampson.
Given the amount of emotionality around this, could we start that public hearing with just a brief overview of what our intention is? Because I'm not sure that everyone out there is listening. So just a clarification at the beginning. Thanks.
And the purpose of the hearing is specific to the ordinance.
Yep.
We can certainly do that. Yep, that's a good suggestion. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Supervisor's conference reports. Supervisor Flood.
Thank you. Attended a WCA conference. I wanted to tell you that I didn't see anybody else from this county at this Human Services Redesign Workshop, and it was put on by Andrew Phillips, the lawyer for Wisconsin Counties Association, and Bill Orth, Sauk County Human Services Director. Their bottom line was, human services delivery in its current state is not sustainable, and they then presented guidelines for redesign. I really intended to make a bunch of copies so people could have them, but I forgot. So if you want a copy of the paperwork, just ask me and I'll make them for you. And then I also went to the business meeting of the conference, and the agendas as the rules were adopted, the minutes were adopted. There was a report from the executive director, report on resolutions. There were 8 resolutions. One was offered from Pepin County about establishing a nonpartisan election for legislator and county offices. The committee recommended that be indefinitely postponed because the Wisconsin Counties Association already supports nonpartisan and county offices and has gone on record in the past for not supporting it for state offices. So that was exactly what the entire body voted for. Outagamie recommending the state of Wisconsin keep its current recycling program. That passed. That resolution will become part of our platform. Wisconsin County's Eau Claire County opposing the centralization of income maintenance programs. That also passed. Outagamie County opposing the cuts to child support program, food stamp program, and Medicaid, and supporting the restoration of funding at the federal level. There was an amendment by Milwaukee County asking that staffing at child support be kept at the same level through 2011. That also passed. Eau Claire County had a resolution supporting the work of Western Dairyland and continuing community development block grants funding at 2008 levels. That passed. Outagamie County, operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of an intoxicant. This particular resolution will be indefinitely postponed. Some of the legislation has already been adopted, and the position of the WCA in the past was to support Interlock, and this particular legislation does not support Interlock. And then supporting legislation, also Outagamie County, supporting legislation repealing the 1992 county tax levy rate limit. This passed. And then the eighth one was Outagamie County opposing a decrease in delinquent property tax interest rates. This passed. There was one no, and it was me, because we had discussed it in legislative. And the idea of having a delinquency interest rate by the county lower than the rate charged for a loan to pay it off might mean that nobody ever pays them off because they're just going to wait. I mean, if it's higher than the bank loan, then they may borrow the money and pay it off. It's just a way to look at it. And then that's about it. We had reports of officers. The fee will remain the same for belonging to the county's association, which is $14,077 a year. It's been the same since 2003, so we can't complain. And that's about it.
Thank you, Supervisor Flood. I also want to acknowledge your willingness to serve as the official delegate to the WCA business meeting on behalf of La Crosse County. Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was a North Central Association of RC&Ds. Those are the resource conservation development for the Midwest area part of the country. It was held at Stevens Point on September 14, 15, and 16. As you heard and probably know, that the funding for RC&Ds went away. The feds cut us off. There were presently 375 RC&Ds throughout the United States. Some of these are going to go by the wayside. They're not going to survive, so they're going to be falling as they run out of money. And the object of this was how we are now a nonprofit organization connected to no one, so we have to generate our own income. So most of the convention was talking about how do we survive without generating a lot of income. We bring a lot of grants in, and some of those have administrative fees tied to them and some don't. The convention had a lot of good speakers talking about social media, Money Tree. There's a lot of different seminars that they had. Just item to note is that we belong to Southwest Badger, which is made up of 9 counties from La Crosse County south, and we have about 6 employees right now. We just got a forestry grant for the Kickapoo Valley for $532,000. We have a new invasive species grant for $253,000. We hired a coordinator, and that coordinator is going to be looking at our lake at Lake Neshonoc and checking all of the invasive species we have out in the lake. He's done some research on that already, and he wasn't able to make our meeting at Lake Neshonoc 2 weeks ago. We got a grant for emerald ash borer down along the Mississippi at Black Hawk Park for about $250,000. And we also are working with Alliance Energy on alternative fuels, switchgrass, junk wood, and a lot of other things that are going to be coming on the scene in a few years after the fuel price does go up a little bit more. So if anybody got anything you want to know about some of these things, I'd let me know. And in order to survive in the world today, the State RC&D Association has a fundraiser. They have to start raising their own money, and I do have tickets for a football game for the Green Bay Packers and the Raiders on December 11th. $2 a piece or three for five. So
see you after the meeting for those tickets?
I guess so. I don't want to bring it in the meeting because I...
out in the hallway after the meeting will be ticket sales. Great. Thank you, Supervisor Bina. Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The sessions I attended, Dial just mentioned two of them at the Wisconsin counties. One was on mental health issues in county jails. Very interesting. It always is probably not surprising to most of us on the county board that we were really doing everything that was suggested in that conference, and still you notice that the last time the sheriff talked that we still have some issues regarding that, and as much work as we have done with it, we still have some issues there. The other was on interoperability, and that's kind of an interesting subject, certainly emergency communication, the idea that everyone would be able to communicate on the same frequency and that we'd have better communication. That's something they've been working on for several months, but it was a good explanation of what they're doing statewide. And also related to the mental health, I also did attend with a couple of other supervisors the presentation Amos did on, I can't remember if it was Thursday night or Wednesday night of last week, and that too was related to mental health issues, and I thought it was a good community meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Supervisor Burke. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you. I, too, join many colleagues down at the Wisconsin Counties Association meeting and also went to the Serving People with Mental Illness in County Jails. The presenter was from Rock County, and he expressed the statistic that 16% of their inmates had mental health issues, and that one of the things to be aware of is to be sure to check their the physical conditions of these inmates too. Thyroid issues, infection, those kinds of things can have an effect on them. But I too think that we're doing a very good job with our mental health programs for our jail. I went to the Discovery Farms, the Pursuit of Sustainability in Wisconsin Agriculture and Rural Communities, which was very fascinating. And the main point was that sustainability as it relates to farming has these three items: profitability, income over costs, environmentally protective, and the challenge there is managing manure, and then socially acceptable. And then the Wisconsin Women in County Government gathering with the new Act 10, the one item that has yet to be determined is what has happened to the earning of females versus males on the dollar. It was 77 cents on the dollar, and now this will have, they were expecting quite an impact on the wages of women in terms of how much money on the dollar they will make with this new Act 10. And then finally, I went to the recycling and resource management in the waste stream because I am in the Solid Waste Policy Board. And again, I'm finding that we are looking at our funding issues, our long-term sustainability and our hauler contracts and all of those things. So even though it wasn't brand new information, some of the resources that were given were also very helpful. So I did think it was a very worthwhile convention for me.
Thank you, Supervisor Wood. Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. I also attended the WCA conference. I rode with Jeff Schrader, and Ralph Gary and Ray Ebert also rode, and there was like about at least a dozen people from La Crosse County there. I attended all highway transportation meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Benrud. Supervisor Friedland.
I left the WCA conference early in order to come back to La Crosse for the Cooley Partners for Sustainability dinner, where our Jay Johnson was recognized as one of the two most valuable people in sustainability this year. So, so I can't report on anything more.
Did you want to respond, Supervisor Jay Johnson?
No.
Okay. Anybody else on conference reports? Supervisor Cruz.
I, too, attended the WCA, and I just wanted to add a little bit to Margaret's report about sustainability. This was sustainability of the family farm in Wisconsin, and we were told that there are 13,000 surviving dairy farms in Wisconsin, and that that number is rapidly decreasing. And they highlighted the essential elements of sustainability as collaboration, system, and imagination. And Margaret already touched on some of those. The complexity of issues confronting the family farm go way beyond individual practices and require cooperation and collaboration. But one thing I wanted to highlight is that one of the professors from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the farming department very much supported the science of our own zoning measure and the animal units that are a sustainable number in order to continue sustainable farming practices. And so the science is behind it. Too bad we couldn't make it stick. Thanks.
Thank you, Supervisor Cruz. Any other conference reports? If not, thank you all for those. And over to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. I have two proclamations to begin with. Community Planning Month proclamation, October 2011. Whereas change is constant, affects all cities, towns, suburbs, counties, townships, rural areas, and other places. And whereas community planning and plans can help manage this change in a way that provides better choices for how people work and live. And whereas community planning provides an opportunity for all residents to be meaningfully involved in making choices that determine the future of their community. And whereas the full benefit of planning requires public officials and citizens who understand, support, and demand excellence in planning and plan implementation. And whereas the month of October is designated as National Community Planning Month throughout the USA and its territories, and whereas the American Planning Association and its professional institute, the American Institute of Certified Planners, endorsed National Community Planning Month as an opportunity to highlight the contribution sound planning and plan implementation made to the make to the quality of our settlements and environment, and whereas the celebration of National Community Planning Month gives us the opportunity to publicly recognize the participation and dedication of the members of County's Planning Resources and Development Committee and all of the Town, Village, and City Plan Commissions of La Crosse County and other citizen planners who have contributed their time and expertise to the improvement of La Crosse County, Wisconsin. And whereas we recognize the many valuable contributions made by professional community and regional planners of La Crosse County and extend our heartfelt thanks for the continued commitment to public service by these professionals, now therefore be it resolved that the month of October is hereby designated as Community Planning Month in La Crosse County in conjunction with the celebration of National Community Planning Month.
Moved by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That proclamation is approved unanimously.
And the next proclamation is October 2011 Solid Waste and Recycling Month, whereas dedicated nationally recognized county professionals help to minimize our county's impact on the environment by effectively managing waste through award-winning programs, and whereas La Crosse County solid waste programs in part include waste energy, permanent household hazardous materials collection, asphalt shingle recycling, treatment of petroleum-impacted soils, and trailer home recycling, and whereas in addition to these programs, La Crosse County facilities, local and regional collaborative efforts in managing waste through shared recycling newsletters, mobile collection of household hazardous materials, access to the waste energy program, and solid waste planning. And whereas La Crosse County has shown its commitment to further enhancing solid waste and recycling efforts through sustainability practices, which will be coordinated by the County Sustainability Coordinator. And whereas residents benefit from the cost-saving, improved service, and enhanced sustainability that result from intergovernmental collaboration at all levels of government on solid waste and recycling collection, processing, and beneficial reuse of byproducts. And whereas all residents have an ongoing responsibility to participate and sustainability through decreasing the amount of garbage that is produced in our homes, schools, communities, and workplace by practicing waste reduction, recycling, and buying recycled products. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of October as La Crosse County Solid Waste and Recycling Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to the welfare of La Crosse County residents.
Moved by Supervisor Jay Johnson, seconded by Supervisor Karen Johnson. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That proclamation is approved unanimously.
Okay, next are a couple of items that I know you'll be interested in seeing. First, I'll call in Hank Cook, who's promised a very short review of the status of the gas to energy project. He's got props along with. While Hank is coming forward, I just want to mention to members of the executive committee and others, we are tentatively scheduled for interview of candidates for Corporation Council for Monday morning, Tuesday morning, October 18th. For Corp Council. We extended the period of time for advertisements. I will get to you by the end of the week, and I'll announce it to the entire board if you're interested in sitting on that. We didn't get a large pool of qualified applicants, so we extended the application period, so we may have to reschedule that. So particularly for executive committee members, we are scheduled for Tuesday, October 18th at 8:30 for first interviews for Corp Council. We extended the time through the end of this week because we didn't get a large pool of applicants. So I will be back in touch with you, and of course we'll inform the whole county board. So I meant to mention that earlier, but stay tuned on that. So because that's actually before your next county board meeting, we'll discuss this at your executive committee meeting this Wednesday. So, and then with that, I will turn this over to Hank.
Thank you. Arlene took the proclamation on solid waste and she framed it, and I will take this back and I will give it to the staff and I will let them know how much you appreciate the efforts at the solid waste department. And if you're wondering, after 2.5 years with you, I still love garbage. I'm going to give you just a quick overview on what's happening with the gas to energy project so that you can keep up to date on it. If I could have advanced the slides for me. It goes too fast. Can you go back one? First slide I have is on budget. Right now we are actually a little under budget from what has been approved. There was a contingency approved of $57,000. I've asked our contractors, vendors, and other people, I do not want to go into the contingency. I want to bring this project in on budget, and they are striving to do that. So that's what we're hoping for. We also keep a retainage with our contractor, a 5%, that there is certain vegetation which may not sprout to next year, so that'll guarantee that. But this is where we are in the project right now. Right now, we are $32,000 under the budget, so that's good news. I don't have as good of news on the schedule. There's been a couple delays, both with our side of the work and with Gunderson Lutheran. On our side, we've hit some underground utilities that were unexpected. They weren't located. They weren't known to exist out there. They caused some delays. We had a couple rain days that also came in there. There were a couple points on the project. We actually slowed down so that we could do a change order that actually saved us money, a negative change order. And that took a little bit longer. The very last thing is we have a lot of onerous requirements with the Public Service Commission. And if I had any hair, it would be laying on the floor, but we'll get through that. On Gunderson Lutheran's side, their engine arrived a little bit late. It came from Austria. It had to go down to Florida, had to have certain fittings put on. When it arrived, certain modifications were needed. It was painted the wrong color. There were a few other little problems. The other thing that happened that was the most important thing was that during the process of construction, Excel made certain testimony to the Public Service Commission that they wanted to change buyback rates, which could have had a serious impact on this project. Gunderson Lutheran negotiated with Excel, and just in this last week, they got letters of assurances that their buyback rate will make this project profitable both for Gunderson Lutheran and ourselves. So that's very good news. Now, it still has to go to Public Service Commission yet. That'll be November, December, or January before it's approved. We don't see any reason why it won't. Gunderson Lutheran doesn't see any reason why it wouldn't be approved. But that's why our start date has changed from October 2011 to January of 2012. Here's what our building looks like out at the landfill. This is the compressor building. This is in August. That's the compressor. Thank you very much, Public Works Infrastructure Committee and County Board, for allowing us to purchase this compressor ahead of the bid process. If we hadn't done that, it would not have arrived in time for us to even meet the January schedule. So that's a good thing. But that is the compressor that actually compresses the gas, then it transports it to the Gunderson-Luther. Here's an air photo shot back in September of the interstate. And this is the south lane. This is the north or the westbound lane, eastbound lane here. This is where we cross the interstate right here. And you can see this manhole, if I could hold my hand steady, is where it comes up on this side, and then it runs along South Kinnikuhle Road. This pipe is in the ground. It's in the ground all the way to Gunderson Lutheran. And actually, from this picture, the grass is now green on those areas that have been disturbed. This is a process called puddling. I'd like to call it piddling. But what they do is they take a pressure hose, and if you see all the marks here, this is at Critter Court in South Gunderson Lutheran Lane. Look at all the utility marks in this area. There's a bunch of them. And what they do is they take a water hose with pressure, he puts it in the ground, he makes mud, and he sucks it out with this vacuum hose, and they dig a hole without cutting wires and disturbing utilities. And what they were looking for here were utilities that weren't on the map. We hit them. This is the drilling operator that actually drilled under the interstate and drilled under some intersections and that. He sits in this seat here. The drill is out in front of him, and it can advance many thousands of feet and many feet under the ground. He has a control panel here. But the most important thing is you see the earmuffs he's wearing. That's not for noise. He's in constant communication with a guy out in the field that has a meter that knows exactly where that drill bit is. So as he crossed the interstate, we had our contractor literally crossing that, putting little dots on the pavement. We knew exactly where he was. When it came on out on the other side, I stood there. He was within 2 inches of where they predicted to be. Excellent. Here's that place where they were puddling, and you can see what we ran into here. Just a tremendous number of utilities. There were power lines. There were communications lines. There were data lines. There were electric lines. There was an irrigation system all in here. This was supposed to have been drilled. The drill couldn't horizontally drill through this area because there was so much interference, so they had to open cut it. This resulted in some of the delays that we experienced on the project. And of course, when you're digging around utilities like this, you have to go very slow. There's a lot of hand digging that's done in this process. Here's an aerial view. That picture I just showed you was right up here at the corner. That gas pipe is now in, comes along this side of the administration building of Gunderson Lutheran, comes back here. And if you notice back here, this is where Gunderson Lutheran will put their engine, and that's going to generate electricity and heat. You'll notice that there's a trench that's been excavated across here that goes over to the clinic. The hot water that comes off that radiator will go through that pipe and will provide the heat then for the clinic. There's also a buried pipe that goes here into the administration building. That's how they get heat. That's why this project is a combined heat and power project. They produce more revenue, better use of the energy, and that's why we did this partnership with Gunderson Lutheran, was to take advantage of that. This is what the engine looks like. It comes from Austria. It's made by General Electric. It comes in a large box, as you can see here, and that is the engine inside there. If you've ever taken a tour of a World War II submarine and you've been in the back, towards the back torpedo room, and you looked at these great big engines and generators, it looks exactly like that. That's in place. So in real quick summary, right now, yes.
Why did the color matter?
Well, that's Gunderson's container. And they're very fastidious on the looks of their grounds and their buildings and stuff. From what I understand, the color sample was submitted like this, and the color was here. The people that painted it looked at the back side of the piece of sample and painted it that color. But that's Gunderson Lutheran's problem. It had no impact on us, but I understand their fastidiousness. In terms of the project, then, right now we're under budget. I expect to be on budget for this project. We did have a slight overage in the engineering. We took that through the Public Works Infrastructure Committee. The engineering budget is separate. I had some other projects that were under budget, so I don't expect to go over engineering this year in the budget. There's about a three-month delay. I think we're all anxious to see that flare turned out and begin to see those checks roll into us from Gunderson Lutheran. What we're finding out through this process with the delays and other things, we have a strong partnership with Gunderson Lutheran. We have great communications with us. They have kept us informed of things that happened to us. It allowed us to say to our contractor, don't do that because it'll cost us more money. We have more time because Gunderson Lutheran has this delay. So by having those good communications, it's actually saved us money. Very proactive working relationship, and both parties very responsible and very accountable to each other. So I think we're going to be very happy with this partnership. Couple issues to be resolved. We have to work through the technical details with all the Public Service Commission requirements. And we do have to see that approval from Public Service Commission regarding the rate for Gunderson Lutheran on there. We will continue to do our monthly reports as we've done from the beginning of this project to the Public Works and Infrastructure Committee. If anything would change differently, they would be the first to know. So I'll be happy to answer any additional questions.
Supervisor Bina.
I have two or three. When you opened the ground up, I could see the utilities all over, but isn't there supposed to be a schematic for all the utilities that were put underground at some point in time? And maybe they go back far enough. So I understand you ran into some problems with the utilities and it cost us some more money, but there theoretically should be a schematic of some type, or, with the impulse machine, you can tell where those pipes and wires are. Secondly, the compressor, that's going to be on our property, not on Gunderson Lutheran's property. That's going to be at the landfill.
That's correct.
Okay, that's what I thought. And the motor that they're getting, is that a motor something like G. Hellman Brewery Company got in there? Because we're capturing the gas there, too, with Gunderson Lutheran, and they're cleaning the gas, and then they got this big motor, which is a big motor, and I think we should have a tour of that sometime. And I think Jeff Rich would give us a tour if we wanted to go down and see it, because they had open house down there a while back. Is it somewhat similar to that? Because we have different gas. Our landfill gas is not the same as the other gas, so I would assume it's about doing about the same thing. That's it.
Sure. Let me take your questions in order. Regarding the schematics, yes, people are supposed to have schematics. They weren't accurate. There were a number of lines that weren't on the maps. We ran into wires that had been disconnected, but they never took them out of the ground. So you can just imagine that poor backhoe operator when he pulled out some wires, and it was like, my God, am I going to be electrocuted? And it turns out that they were abandoned wires. We found a sewer that they forgot to put on the maps. I agree with you. We should keep our maps up to date. At the landfill, we have a map of all our pipes, and every year we update it and make sure it's accurate. The second one, yes, the compressor will be on our property. We need to control that because it interacts with our gas field, and we want it to be right there so we can do that. The engine that you're talking about with the brewery is a Genbacher engine, which is just like the engine we're going to have, only ours is slightly larger. So they're very similar engines made by the same company. That was the other part of our partnership that we really liked. Gunderson Lutheran's using an engine that they're familiar with. They have to operate that engine, so we don't have to worry about operating that engine. And that gave us a lot of confidence. The big difference, if you take a tour of the brewery, it stinks. It smells like rotten eggs, which is hydrogen sulfide. Why Gunderson Lutheran wants this project is our gas doesn't stink that bad. It has a different odor. It smells like rotten garbage, okay? But not the hydrogen sulfide. And ours is very low in hydrogen sulfide, very low in certain mercaptans and other things, siloxanes also. Gunderson Lutheran desires that gas because there's less treatment. The only treatment we have to do is because of moisture. Gas comes out of the landfill at 80 degrees. and it's saturated with moisture. When we run it through our compressor, the compressor heats that gas to 200 degrees. What we do is we take it through a chiller. We chill it to 40 degrees. All the moisture comes out. That also gets rid of some of the odorants that are in it. Then we take it through a heat exchanger in our compressor building. We rewarm it to 80 degrees, and we put it in the pipeline. You might say, what the heck are you doing? Well, remember, when that gas is in that pipeline, it's going to cool off. We do not want moisture in that pipeline. And so by chilling it to 40 degrees, we get the moisture out. We don't believe it's going to go below about 47 degrees in the ground. So that's the treatment we're doing. That's a little bit different than what they had to do at the brewery, but minor compared to what they're doing.
Will you use your microphone, please, Supervisor Bina? Thank you.
Do we need a holding tank, or will the pipeline be the holding tank? We're going to be creating more gas than they can use at any given time. Do we put a tank in, or did they?
The pipe will be like a long holding tank, since it's almost 2 miles long in its pressure. It acts that way. Holding tanks are typically not used in the gas systems, and they run directly out of the wells and that. We will not provide them initially with enough gas for their engine. Their engine is designed to burn 450 cubic feet a minute of gas. We're producing just slightly under 300. We want to grow our gas generation so we can take advantage of the revenues in the future. But we were really pleased that Gunderson Lutheran did not put in a 250 cubic foot engine and that we had excess gas. They stepped up to the plate and they put an engine a little bit bigger saying, we're relying on you, La Crosse County, you're going to produce more gas. And if I can get the garbage, I'll produce the gas.
Any other questions for Hank? If not, thank you very much for the update.
Thank you.
Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Yes, we've got two main agenda items for this evening. Ron Chamberlain, our highway commissioner, is going to update us in the budget context of what exactly is going on with our road system and the challenges that we have keeping up with our system highway needs. We haven't had this detailed a discussion on highway needs since probably the 2006 or 7 road study. And this is going to be a more detailed examination of road needs, how we define that, how our highway commissioner and staff look at it. And it'll help set the stage for our discussions on capital improvements, both into the 2012 budget and into the future. I had an opportunity to ride along with Ron last week and learn more as a layperson about many of the challenges that we have and what's happening to our road system, particularly outside the urban areas. So it was a real education. I know if you get a chance, Ron would love to have you do the same kinds of things, particularly those of you with rural districts may be interested in knowing some of these challenges. But I learned a great deal from him putting this presentation together, and I think it'll help guide you as we talk about capital needs, particularly into the next county board term. So with that, Ron, take it away.
Thank you, sir, members of the county board, Madam Chair. We're looking at an update on La Crosse County highway system needs. Looking at developing this, I thought this was rather appropriate, and I really couldn't ask the newspaper to time it better. Thursday, September 22nd, 2011, this is a Our View, Transportation Funding Drives the Economy. I won't bore you with reading all the way through this, but what I will do is hit the key highlights. That paragraph there. At a time when we're trying to boost business and employment, this seems like the wrong time to let transportation funding drive off the cliff. Aging infrastructure combined with growing population means challenging times ahead. Here's some more facts to consider, and I thought this was very interesting where this information came from and very appropriate and timely. One-third of the major roads are in poor or mediocre. A fourth of the bridges are deficient. Air traffic control faces a major overhaul. Potential cost of lost business, $336 billion. Of course, that's nationwide. If you're guessing that such information is coming from a liberal tree-hugging think tank, you'd be surprised to know that it comes from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Here's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce recommends for modernizing our infrastructure. And for our purposes, quite frankly, I highlighted the applicable things that I think are most important. Spur private investment and remove red tape. That's called streamlining, something that the state and the federal government are working toward, but not quick enough. Invest in the ailing transportation and water infrastructure, our roads. Modernize, protect energy infrastructure. You just got done with a presentation regarding that. Update telecommunications infrastructure. And as the debate heats up, remember that investment can have a return. I've heard many, many, many times from presentations with the U.S. Chamber, from the Transportation Development Association, and from others, that $1 of investment in transportation yields a $3 return. For the sake of our discussion tonight and going forward, I felt that it'd be a little bit better if we could show you what I'm actually talking about when we're talking about roads. So what we have here, this area here is called a driving lane. This is the shoulder, this is paved shoulder, and then the gravel shoulder coming down. Side slope coming all the way down, and then the back slope will come up on the back end. Come on. Whoop. Other way. There you go. Okay, well, when we talk about pavements and improvement pavements and pavement life cycle, we need to make sure that you understand at least something about pavement structure. So hot mix is, of course, your surface treatment. Then you have your base course, typically an aggregate, a gravel or something else. And then underneath is your subbase. We have a diverse amount of soils in La Crosse County. We're lucky that way. We have good aggregate sources, all of our gravel pits, and for the most part we have some fairly decent subbase, but this is particularly critical when you get into clay areas of the county or, the poorer soils. Good farming soil is not good road building soil. The sandier the soil, the poorer the soil, the easier it is to build roads. Okay. I put together some definitions as we go forward with this discussion, and for the next board, these are definitions that you definitely need to have an understanding of, especially when, quite frankly, you're listening to me so you understand what I'm talking about. Maintenance. This is directly out of the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials definition. Includes activities to preserve and repair a system of roadways with its elements. With its elements to its designed or accepted configuration, system elements include travelway surfaces, the blacktop, shoulders, roadsides, drainage facilities, bridge, signs, marking, lighting fixtures, etc. Also includes activities to offset the effects of weather, vegetation growth, deterioration, traffic wear, vandalism, etc. Resurfacing. Placing a new surface on an existing roadway to extend or renew pavement life. Generally, no improvement in the capacity of geometrics is performed. In other words, curves, hills, those are geometrics. No additional right-of-way is required. Overlay is placed directly on top of existing pavements. Rehabilitation. Removing the total thickness of all pavement layers from an existing roadway, providing a new paved surface without changing the subgrade. In other words, not mucking around at all with the gravel or the subbase beneath it. Generally, no improvement in capacity, no additional traffic. Geometrics, no increase in the roadbed width is performed. May include the transfer of width between pavement and shoulders, in other words, widening out the pavement or the driving surface and narrowing up possibly the shoulders. Additional right-of-way will typically not be required, frequently can and does include the addition and or removal of the base gravel. Reconditioning. Work in addition to resurfacing or rehabilitation includes improvement of an isolated grade, curve, intersection, site distance problem to improve safety or changing subgrade to widen the shoulders, think in terms of complete streets, or correct a structural problem. Reconditioning may require additional right-of-way, does not include increasing capacity, i.e. no additional lanes. Reconstruction. Total rebuilding of both pavement and the subgrade of an existing highway. It includes minor widening to widen lanes and or adding parking, bicycle accommodations, or auxiliary lanes. Normally, this type of construction will require additional right-of-way work, which either changes the existing location of the subgrade shoulder points or removes all of the existing pavement and base course for at least 50% of the length of the project. This is not the type of reconstruction that we typically do. Okay? When you hear us talk about reconstruction, what we're actually talking about is rehabilitation and or maybe reconditioning. Okay? For the purposes of discussion, though, I will maintain within these definitions. And finally, expansion. Same as reconstruction, but also involves the construction of additional through lanes beyond the work associated with reconstruction. In La Crosse County, you would typically see this in an urban area for our purposes. We don't look at a lot of expansion exterior to the La Crosse area. Why are those so critical that you understand those definitions? PACER ratings for paved roads. The Wisconsin Information System for Local Roads is a system that the DOT put together a number of years ago, and what it does is it tracks all the pavement conditions in the state of Wisconsin on local system, not the state trunk highways. That's state trunk highways are tracked different. It's been many, many years. I don't remember what PACER stands for, and quite frankly, I haven't seen a definition for it in eons. That's the rating system. It starts at 1, goes to 10. 1, as you can see, is failed, need to total reconstruction. 10 being an excellent of new construction. Each one of those numbers, we have roads that meet those descriptions with the exception of the number 1. We do not have any roads currently rated at a number 1, but we do have number 2. Pavement maintenance timeline rules of thumb. Roads are typically constructed with a 30-year life expectancy with proper and timely maintenance, meaning that all of these maintenance processes must be done at a certain time to get the most value out of your investment. Think of it in terms of a car. Changing the oil, doing the tune-up, changing the timing belt, all has to be done at the proper time if you want to maximize your investment. So maintenance crack filling, that's changing the oil. These are the cracks where you'll see us out there. We'll route them out a little bit wider. We'll put in rubber. This is typically performed on pavements with a rating, back to that rating system, of a 7 or an 8. Maintenance seal coating. Typically the 5 to 7 year time frame on new pavements and then performed again 5 to 7 years after an overlay. And an overlay is a maintenance process that we'll get to here. Performed on pavements rated at a 6 and some of the less severe ratings of a 5. Resurfacing non-structural overlays, thin and ultra-thin. Performed typically to 10 to 15 years old and performed of pavements rated on a 5. As Mr. O'Malley goes through the budget and you look at the capital improvement program, this year's highway capital improvement program will show a lot of this type of overlay in it. We're getting back to nuts and bolts of maintenance and maintaining what we have. Okay. Resurfacing structural overlays performed on 15 to 20 year pavement that has an excellent base and whose pavement structure demonstrates adequate original structure performed on pavements typically rated at a 4. This is something we do not do. For the simple reason is La Crosse County typically does not have the pavement structure to make this a viable option. Our pavements were built underneath for weights and traffic lots less than what they're currently maintaining. The traffic volumes have increased and weights have increased as time has gone on. Rehabilitation and reconditioning, full depth recycling, performed toward the end of the pavement's life, 25 to 30 years performed on pavements of a rating of 3 to 4. That's typically where our reconstruction is for the most part. Reconditioning, reconstruction performed toward the end of pavement life, 25 to 30 years, and that's performed on pavements rated at a 1 or 2. In other words, they are shot. There are no alternatives. La Crosse County numbers. Here's our historic average PACER rating. Years number, years 1993, 98, 2001, 2003, and 2005. I got directly out of the 2007 road study that you had done. 2011, this is a biannual requirement, is this late spring, early summer. We have 284.51 miles of road with an average PACER rating of 5.85. Keep in mind that's a 1 to 10 scale, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst. And if you look at that, you will see that we have gradually decreased over time, and that is some concern. Average rating by functional classification. In other words, what type of traffic, a classification is what type of a traffic does this road serve? You've got the urban local. That's a city street, more or less, without a whole bunch of extra traffic on it. The 2005 rating on that was a 5.8. The 2011 was a 7.09. We've done a good job in the urban area on the local streets that we own. The urban collector, that's a road that brings everything into a more major road. It collects from the exterior area. 6.93 in 2005 to 5.79. We're slipping. The urban arterial, this is the main traffic to get someplace. Think in terms of HD. 7.51 in 2005, 6.35 in 2011. The rural local, 5.32 in 05, 5.29 in 11, and we're more or less sort of holding our own again on the local type of collector. The rural collector, 6.53 in 05, 6.16 in 11. We're losing ground again. The streets that we're losing ground on, the urban collector, the urban arterial, and the rural collector, those are your higher traffic volumes. Those are also typically the ones that have more truck traffic on it, whether it's aggregate, whether it's farming, or whether it's logging. Doesn't matter. That's typically the ones that have more truck traffic on it. Yes, sir.
Supervisor Bina.
These are our these are the county trunk highways, period.
County trunk highways.
Period, yep.
53, 14, 16, they aren't considered.
No. State highways are tracked and rated under an entirely different system.
Okay, even though they might serve as a collector, they
aren't. Mr. Bina, you need to use your microphone. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Condition frequency report. What this is showing is a percentage of the roads and where they fall in the PACER ratings. The percentage, of course, is on the vertical. Wrong one. You want to roll that back for me, please, Jenny? The percentage of our roads are here. These are PACER ratings across the bottom, and they're grouped by two. In 2005, 0.09% of our roads fell into a 1, 2, or 2. In 2011, 4.21%. And I won't trot through the rest of it, but it's pretty self-explanatory. Again, we're losing ground. Why are we losing ground? Why are our ratings decreasing? Increased traffic. Increased population, increased number of vehicles, increased traffic, especially truck traffic. Truck traffic is what does the major portion of the damage. Increase in weight limits, i.e. Act 167, 98,000 pounds for the timber industry became effective on May 19, 2006. It's 80,000 pounds for everybody else. That went into place after a lot of negotiation between the County Highway Association and the Logging Association. What was proposed between the two associations was that to happen with consideration for axle configuration, additional axles to carry the weight, and with adequate fining infrastructure statute so that the fines really meant something. It got into the legislature. The axle configuration was sort of addressed. The fine infrastructure went away because of some lobbying efforts on some individual truckers. So basically, if they get fined on one load, they can make that up in the next load, and then the following load is pure profit, that additional. So, you know, economically, it tells you right away it pays for the trucking industry to run an overweight load, typically. And we don't have scales on our system to check. So think in terms of getting things to market and what that means. Changes in the climate that have resulted in longer spring breakup periods and more instability. Think about how long it takes to thaw these days. Think about how much rain we get. Think about the moisture. Think about the fact that it frequently these days seems to refreeze for a little while and then thaw again. Increasing costs for construction and maintenance and a decreasing availability of funds to do the same. And I don't mean that we're getting less money. I mean that our money buys less. The dollar is not worth today what it was worth in 2004. Is this a La Crosse County only situation? No. The blue line here is the construction cost index. The red line is the consumer price index. This down here is the difference. That's nationwide. So what does this mean for us? Limestone chips, granite chips, slag, and seal oil and crack filling material are maintenance materials. Those are maintenance costs. Base rock, hot mix asphalt are improvement costs. Reconditioning, rehabilitation, and reconstruction. And fuel is in everything we do. So let's look at fuel. 156.05% increase from 2004. Let's look at oil to do seal coatings, 141.02% increase. Hot mix asphalt, 51.92%. Base rock, 62.50%. Our costs are escalating at a faster rate than you can possibly hope to keep up with. As a result, we're able to do less, hence our ratings are getting better. That's where our rating system is today. The administrator asked that I put this together to start to give you, a little bit of an education on how we look at roads out in the highway department and what we're talking about when we start talking about these various numbers and what the actual impact is for the dollars that you see that you're levying on your constituents. Are there any questions?
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron, on page 10, you talked about weight limits and such, and then you kind of snuck in there and said we don't have scales. What are the scales we see along the interstate then?
On the interstate, not on the local system.
Oh, okay.
We used to, in Adams County, we frequently posted everything in the spring breakup. Actually, it wasn't frequent. It was a yearly event. We posted solid. That's not something that we in La Crosse County have done historically. One of the conversations, we're heavy ag over there, and one of the conversations I had, I got a call from one of the farming concerns over there, and they asked for a different route other than the one we allowed them off of the state trunk highway into their facility. And when I asked why they needed this extra route, because there were two state roads before they got to where they wanted to go on our system, they said, oh, that's simple. We need to avoid the scale at Coloma.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Chamberlain? I think Mr. O'Malley failed to tell you that he just wanted you to deliver some bad news on his behalf. He's used to being the bearer of bad news. That's probably why he asked you to do that. Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you. Your report is very informative, and one of the things I see here that's very concerning is it seems like a lot of the work that needs to be done on our road system involves petroleum-based products, and as we see the world economy begin to recover, and eventually it will, there's going to be a big increase in the price of oil, and I'm just curious we're caught in a situation here where, on the one hand, we're trying to produce vehicles that are more fuel efficient, that use less gasoline, which is basically the largest source of funding, if I'm correct. How do you have some ideas for how are we going to address that challenge going forward as we have increased costs of maintaining the roads and declining funding?
Sure. Let's start out, though, with one slight correction to that. The lion's share of the cost for local roads is not gas tax. It's tax levy dollars. In the state of Wisconsin, that's where it's at. Keep in mind that there's about 10 times the amount of local roads as there is state roads and then some. Okay? And we only get a portion. In the state budget this year, the historic value of general transportation aids, which comes directly out of fuel tax, out of the state's fuel tax money, was set up to be 30% of our costs. That was the best it was ever set up to be. Okay? Today, with the budget that Madison put into place, we are at 18%. We were at 22, 23% last year. So that's ratcheting down. Okay? So the local property taxpayer in the state of Wisconsin, who's bearing the burden for most of the roads in the state? To specifically address the fuel tax, you are correct in that it is a large portion of the funding and that revenue stream is going down. One of the things of particular concern to the transportation industry that's happening right now is the consideration of reauthorization for the transportation bill in Washington. The conversation by the legislature is, quite frankly, to fund what they can afford versus adding money to it out of the general fund. And if they do that, that means a $250 million cut to the state of Wisconsin. That will translate down into La Crosse County with no problems whatsoever. We're building more fuel-efficient cars. People are driving less, all of those things. The legislature, in their infinite wisdom a few years ago, did away with gas tax indexing. That was, in my opinion, a bad move. I don't care which party's in power. It doesn't matter to me. Item number two is, since 1993, there has not been an increase in federal gas tax. Okay? We're talking about a sales tax. I don't know of a better, more fair tax, you know, than tax the users and the entire system that we have. Part of what's wrong is the decrease in funding. Everybody says, well, what can we do about it? The very first thing I think that needs to happen is, I don't want to get struck by lightning, but we need a gas tax increase. That's number one. Number two, because that isn't going to solve it, fuel efficiency is going to continue to go up. Alternative fuels are going to continue to go up. We need to look at an alternative to the gas tax. We need to look at something like vehicle miles traveled, however it's collected. We need to get back to actually taxing the user for the use of that system versus taxing everybody else. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's a good answer. And one other question I have is, are there alternative materials that are being developed to replace some of these petroleum-based road products, or is there anything new there?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is not new. It's Portland concrete. You get about the same life expectancy. The difference is the upfront construction cost on Portland concrete is incredible. The other side of the coin is the maintenance costs on Portland concrete are less. But the life cycle is about the same, hence the cost of the road. The lifetime cost of the road is about the same. Most of the research going in today and new developments, and there's going to be some things that we're going to be moving forward with in La Crosse County, goes into extending pavement life versus looking at necessarily alternatives. Using recycled materials is certainly one of the things for alternatives that's going on. Different types of oils, polymer oils, base stabilization. That's where most of the research has been. Two of the things in those things that I just mentioned that we are going to be utilizing is we're going to be utilizing a base stabilization process starting in 2012, in which we grind up the existing road, we add virgin aggregate, and then we mix an oil into the top 4 inches of that mixture. My experience has seen cracking pushed off 3 to 5 years. Seal coating is really a surface treatment, but when you push off the crack filling and the cracking, you also push off the structural needs, hence you start pushing off overlays. So the lifetime costs come down. And this is very, very economical, very cheap way to do it. Another thing that we're going to be doing is the pavements that you'll see in the overlay section of the capital improvement program are a thin or an ultra-thin process. We're talking about a 1-inch, 3/4 to 1-inch pavement. Okay.
Ron, could I interject here? Yeah. If you have your budget books available, page 3 of the goldenrod is what Ron's starting to refer to, and you'll notice a significantly different approach. Thanks. It's the goldenrod pages at the back of the document, page 3, and if you compare that to your previous highway CIP, you'll see in this listing an organization by maintenance, construction, and unfunded, all in order, so you can see that. And what Ron's starting to describe is what is proposed for 2012. I'll give you the floor back, but thought they could follow that better.
All right. The maintenance overlays is what I'm talking about right now. We're getting back to preserving our good pavements, okay? Acknowledging that we're not doing a lot. When we're preserving those pavements, we're not doing a lot to rebuild what needs to be rebuilt, okay? You can see the unfunded needs addressed here, and we're currently analyzing the entire system for needs, and that is something that we will be rolling out to the next board. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about new processes. That is, the technical term for it is an E10 mix with a polymer oil added to it. Basically what that means, it's got a lot of fines in it, no big gravel. It's a mix that you typically see on an interstate highway. This particular mix was developed for this use with the oil in it. It's very crack resistant. And I've seen, my experience with this particular mix and this process is a 7 to 10 year extension of life. That's significant when we're talking about millions of dollars in infrastructure. So,
did that answer your question, Supervisor?
Yeah, thank you very much. That's an excellent answer. Thank you.
There'll be a quiz at the end of the evening. Yeah. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron, given what you've told us about what's going on locally, my understanding, though, that the transportation fund at the state level was added to by several hundred thousands of dollars from general revenue. So what effect does that have on what you told us earlier?
That helps to make up for some of the money that's been borrowed from it in the past history, is basically what that does. It buys us a little bit of time. The legislature, instead of doing what they have been doing, and I'm not talking about party issues here, both sides are guilty, and raiding the transportation fund, instead of doing that, now they put some money back into it to shore it up, if you will. Still doesn't come near addressing the needs. If you want to look at needs, let's leave the local issues aside. Let's leave La Crosse. Heck, let's leave most of the state out of it. There's more than enough needs in southeast Wisconsin to eat up the transportation budget in the foreseeable future, and extending up the eastern side of the state up the 41 corridor. You're talking about the Zoo Exchange. You're talking about the north-south going from Milwaukee down to the state line. Talking about 41. And those are all, I mean, there's a lot of economic benefit to the entire state that comes through that, so the needs are there. If you will, they've kicked the can down the road a little bit so that they didn't have to make the tough decisions at this point in time when they passed and started doing that. And I'm not knocking that they're doing it. We needed the money in the transportation fund, but it's a day late and a dollar short. And they didn't take the entire step they needed. They just kind of stuttered and stumbled a little bit.
So did our funding got cut, correct?
Correct.
And with no reprieve in sight also? I mean, you think it's a permanent type of thing, or
Yeah, I do think it's a permanent type of thing. Our general transportation aides with the estimate went down, and please, Steve Geary, let me know if I'm wrong. I think $127,000 is what we got to decrease. 153 total? 153 total. Yep.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Wood? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. Ron, do these farmers, the farms, have any weight restrictions on what they can haul?
Yes, there are ag weight restrictions. There is also some current legislation talking about hauling agricultural products that, and I'm not, as of today, dead sure where these are at. I'm sure you could ask Steve and he'd be able to tell you. But there's one proposal that allows a increased weight limit on ag. It's not necessarily all bad. That's quite frankly in the fall of the year running into the winter. So we're talking about the most stable time of the year. And I don't see a major malfunction with that other than more weight on the road is not a good thing. Item number two is again an increased, and currently it's ag, but my understanding is everybody's coming out for this one, and this one's going to be a major push as part of the jobs creation economic enhancement out of the legislature in Madison to increase the weight limits for everything from 80,000 to 90,000 pounds with axle configuration. And as I, you know, talked a little bit earlier, if they do it with axle configuration and if they do it with a fine structure that actually has some meaning, I don't really see the downside of that. As long as you can spread it out. And just point of interest, those big flotation tires you see running down the road sometimes, those don't distribute the weight differently. They'll do as much damage as a small tractor-trailer tire. It's the number of axles that's key to this. How many axles is underneath it?
Well, again, that's going to boil down to enforcement, and that costs more money. Are there any counties in the state that are thinking about giving up their wonderful blacktop roads?
There are. I put together something where I was, I want to say, about 4 years ago, and as early as that, there were units of government in the state talking about grinding up blacktop and taking them back to gravel.
Would that, I suppose you've not done any cost estimates or anything, but you think that would save this county a lot of money? If we did that, because that's what people, there's a lot of people thinking that around the state, you know, that we've been blessed with some wonderful county highway systems around here.
Wisconsin's blessed with a wonderful roadway system, yeah, whether it's county, state, local, doesn't matter. Well, you balance that out with the upfront cost versus the grading, and if we have a nice wet summer like we did, we'd be out about every other week grading those roads. So do I think that would actually save us money in the long run? Probably not. Wouldn't cost us a heck of a lot more in the long run, total figure. So I don't think so. But the thing that always comes to mind is, show me the tourist that wants to go to rural Ashland County and travel roads like that. And, oh, by the way, La Crosse is number five in the state for tourism dollars, economic impact of. Show me the trucking outfit that wants to site on a gravel road. Show me the farm wife that, quite frankly, wants to hang her clothes out there when the trucks are coming by and the dust is coming. I know my wife don't. You know, that's, you know, where we're at. I don't think that going backwards is the thing to do. I think moving forward is the thing to do. Using some new processes, figuring out how to do it, and seeing what we can be innovative on for spreading that cost around to not just the guys that pay the property tax, but, you know, everybody that uses those roads.
I still have three supervisors. I'm just reminding folks we have another small agenda item called the overall budget review. So I'm going to encourage us to keep moving along. Supervisor Cruz?
I'll keep it really short. You were mentioning innovative, and this trajectory of increases seems pretty unsustainable. So in terms of being innovative, can you ever see us like using a pay-as-you-go, like a toll road kind of system? Mm. Would that ever fly in Wisconsin?
It is a full moon, isn't it?
Toll roading is a topic of conversation in Madison. Yeah. Toll road is a topic of conversation regardless of which party you're talking to. The catch to tolling in Wisconsin is the federal government and the strings that were attached when the interstate system went through. So if you want tolling, you know, the first place that you have to change the minds is Washington.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron, thanks for reviewing the various levels of maintenance and construction. This is really helpful. And I also appreciate you segregating the maintenance, construction, unfunded categories in the gold rod capital improvement sheet. That makes really a lot of sense. My question is this, and maybe you can't give us specifics, but and I apologize for asking you before the meeting, but how has your approach or priority list changed, or has it not changed from your predecessor? How, besides the fact that you separated these things out, but how is your priority list? Because I don't have the 2011 budget in front of me, and I don't have the other list to compare this one to.
Let's use this year for a conversation. This year we had a federal project on County B, over by 16. Good dollars, good project, definitely needed to be done. That hasn't changed. The other two projects that we had done that were major in nature were County Trunk Double E from 162 over to T, if I'm not mistaken, and then County Trunk V from T to TT. Those are what I talked about being rehabilitation projects or reconditioning projects. That's where the money was put into. We didn't do overlays. That's the biggest change. Right now we're looking at, and I was really thankful that Steve was willing to go out for a ride so he understand what I was talking about, but we're looking at trying to maintain what we got in an effort to minimize the deterioration moving forward. So we put our money into our good roads. We put what we can afford to in our poor roads. We move forward with funding opportunities. And funding opportunities is one of those things that we're going to bring back to the next board and talk about. And, you know, as a county board, I'll tell you that some of those ideas may not be the most popular things in the world.
So just a general recap then, you're putting more money than your predecessor into the good roads to keep, as a cost-benefit analysis, the money spent there is going to pay off more than replacing a 5 or 4. I don't want to oversimplify it, but it sounds like you are.
I'm trying to buy us some time, is what I'm trying to do.
So you are putting your. It's a policy change on your part, or it's a direction change on your part. You're putting a little more money into the good roads than your predecessor.
Please.
If you look at the graph that talked about, Denny was really concentrating on improving the urban area, the urban collector roads, the ones that are the most visible and the areas that we could have the most impact. He wasn't able to get to the things that Ron, coming in with a new set of eyes, said, if we don't get ahead of the things that are in halfway decent condition and extend their life, we're never going to be able to catch up. So Dennis's focus, you know, again, as an observer, was on, if we go back a couple of line graphs, you can actually see it demonstrated, the average, back to that average one. Rating, there we go, urban local. If you are in the areas very close to the urban area, Holman, Onalaska, La Crosse, you will tend to find very good county roads that are in actually improved condition. And that's where Denny was concentrating his time. That's the resources he had. We weren't able to give him a lot of new resources, so that was his philosophy and his direction. Ron, looking at the whole thing, has said, we've made good efforts in those areas. Now, how are we staying ahead of the declining impact of not having enough money because of rising costs, and how do we stay ahead to buy ourselves some time? So it's not Denny was doing it right or wrong. Ron's doing it right or wrong. That was that time then. This is this time now. What are we going to do to meet this challenge?
Thank you. I appreciate it. I wasn't implying anything about No,
who was doing it right or wrong.
But I was
I just thought might be helpful that that's the kind of progress we are making over the last several years.
Dennis was concentrating on where the majority of the actual daily traffic is. I'm looking at the whole system and trying to.
Supervisor Beener, you have a quick question? No, you don't. Never mind. I was wrong. I shocked you. No, really, it's okay.
I did have my hand up once upon a time. The question I have is, I see you're not going to fix Olay until next year, but we're investigating putting a bridge in someplace in that system now. No.
If you can flip back to your canary sheets.
Well, that's 2 years from now.
Yeah, well, no, it isn't. Yes, it is. Look under design and acquisition, the very top one. See, $710,000 for OA.
Yep.
That's to finish up the design out there on OA, and that is to acquire the right-of-way that we're going to need to rebuild that and do it properly. And, yes, there is a new bridge in the course of that. The upstream of that, there's a pipe, and downstream of that, there's a pipe, but the DNR really wanted to see a bridge go in.
Well, my concern is that there's an awful lot of traffic from Bangor and West Salem going on that road every morning at night to the south side of La Crosse, and we need to do something out there in the near future.
I 110% agree, and that's something that Steve and I have talked about numerous times, on how to get that done. We've got a small chunk of that, and I say relatively small, $600,000 in grant for part of that improvement. But the total project is well over $4 million. So that's one of those conversations that we feel the board is going to have to weigh in on how and when they would like to get that done.
Last comment, Supervisor Doyle, you had an update on the legislation that was referred to about 15 minutes ago, a while back.
Okay. We're voting on it in the Transportation Committee tomorrow.
Okay.
And I guess I'd like to put a plug in. Every time one of those bills comes through, my office calls Ron, and he's really quick at getting back. I really appreciate it. He does a great job for the county. And he also helped along with my office to coordinate a meeting of the area highway commissioners on another project. We made a good hire when we got Ron.
That sounds like a perfect note to end the presentation on. Thank you, Supervisor Doyle. Thank you. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. I know that many of you that live in urban areas may not find that as fascinating as some of us that spend a lot of time in rural areas. But one of the challenges that's going to be, just to wrap that up and why I thought it was so timely, especially for the new board, is remember, if the lion's share of the funding that we deal with on our road system is property taxes, roughly 70% of our property taxes are generated by urban dwellers. People in the cities, people in the villages. So it's going to continue to challenge how we set those priorities on roads that you and your constituents in many of your districts don't travel as often as those of you are in rural districts. And I don't want to set up that dichotomy, but that is frankly who ends up paying for the majority of these things. That's why we need to come up with creative ways to deal with that, and it will end up doing more consideration of things like consideration of the vehicle tax. It will consider different ways that we deal with debt, different ways that we extend debt for roads, and that's why I think you're going to be pleased with some of the things that we've got setting the stage for 2013 in this budget. So that by segue is the overall budget. I will try to go through this quickly because I want to give you an overview of what I think is one of the proudest budgets that I've ever had the opportunity to lead for an organization. As I've shared with you before, this is the 26th budget that I've done with an organization, and I can't do any of this without the strong work and support of all of our department heads, but in particular, I want to point out the great work of Gary Engelson in the finance department, and of course, Mary Powell. Without her, we wouldn't be able to bring you all of this information. So I want to make sure that you recognize that while I get to make a lot of the decisions that bring you this recommendation, I can't do anything without their support and without the teamwork of just a dynamite my team of department heads. You just saw Hank, you saw Ron, Jason, Doug, et cetera, throughout the organization are really a part of the team that makes these budgets work. So with no further ado, if this will flick, summary overview, the 2012 recommended budget is a total gross budget of 134.117. There's a typo there. It's up by 0.33% total gross. After two consecutive years of a 0% change in operating levy, and the only increase has been over the last 2 years for debt service, we are bringing you a budget for 2012 so that is a 0% change in operating, library, and debt levies. The tax rate rises a little bit due to decreased value, so our total tax rate would go from 384 to 387, even though we haven't raised levy dollars at all. Nearly every department shows a decreased levy, and I can explain those departments that weren't able to show a decreased levy. Most of the impact, of course, is in non-departmental, in shared revenue, interest revenue, and those types of things. We did not do this by increasing our reliance on fund balances generally. I'll go through that in detail. You get the blue summary page that actually walks you through that. Again, we like to provide you a lot of summaries so that you don't just rely on the individual line items. We think that, you know, just giving you too much detail almost bogs you down. We want to make sure that you have summaries that show you what's happening throughout the rest of the system. The other thing that we ruled out very early on that I shared with you is that while the new governor's budget allowed for counties to raise levy by the amount of new construction, we ruled that out because of the potential of us hitting the tax rate limit. Had we gone up by the value of new construction, we would have been able to raise the levy by $242,000, or about 0.8, almost 1%. The tax rate would have been at 390, our operating rate would have been at 316. And just for those of you keeping score, our operating rate cannot go above 3.24, which is the 1992 rate limit. We've got different rules than everybody else. We're still the 15th lowest tax rate. I'll do a bunch of comparison information in the fall, in the November presentation that will update you. But we still worry about being able to stay under that 324. By the way, the WRS cost shift from from the county to employees obviously helped with some of this, but not all of the challenges. The last couple pages of this document show you the detail, and I'll walk you through that. You've asked for that. Now that we have the exact budget put together, it saved a little bit more than I expected, but again, most of it, much of it, wasn't saving in levy, and I'll explain that. It's about 59%. Okay, 2012 overview. The impact is spread across departments, but you know, having worked with me for this number of years, this is the my ninth year, we have not spread across the board cuts to departments. We work together as a team and try to find solutions because many smaller departments, being almost entirely staff, can't do an across the board cut without cutting back on services, while other departments have more ability to do that. We are not highly reliant on increased user fees. You will get, by the end of this week, the entire schedule of all user fees, although I do a pretty detailed summary here of where the impacts are. We're lucky enough that we had no increase in health and dental premiums, and we're going to consider other changes in plan design to help control costs. We're meeting with the Employee Health Insurance Committee later on this month to talk about some small increases in deductibles, but we've continued to have a good experience. Employees continue to participate in our wellness programs, health risk assessments, and analyzing what are the things they can do to help make their lives better, but also to help to control long-term costs. You'll end up seeing, and I mentioned this earlier, that I do not recommend refinancing of the 2001A LEC debt in 2011. We decided not to do that, and I'll show you how that's going to end up being beneficial. Instead of refinancing, we're going to pay it off early, and we'll show you how that ends up working. We continue to use highway debt as a short-term strategy, so the only new debt that you'll be issuing in 2012 under the recommended budget is about $2.1 million for highway. We'll actually end up, by the end of 2012, have lower total debt due than we did at the start. We're going to pay off the 2001A early, and I'll show you that in more detail. The total budget shows a net decrease of 5.08 FTEs, excluding the economic support regionalization. I separated that because we will be adding some positions there. If you agree with that, it'll be a separate resolution. It's because we end up being the central source for economic support. So we will be adding, I think it's three or four positions. I'll get to that slide later. But that I separated from that resolution because I didn't want you to misunderstand. There is no cost to La Crosse County for the economic support regionalization. It's, in fact, I think it preserves our leadership and regional guidance for the surrounding counties there. Finally, I spent a lot of time in my earlier report talking about issues with the MVHS Commission and Western Wisconsin Cares clients. MVHS board under the leadership of Roger Plesha and Sharon Hampson and Margaret Wood and others from other counties approved a 5% increase in the per diem rate from $57 a day to $59.86, and they transferred $615,000 from the MVHS reserve back to La Crosse County that we can use to help stabilize and as we're dealing with this Western Wisconsin CARES issue. So again, it demonstrates the partnership. That reserve had been there from previous savings within Lakeview. Pardon? We're only using half of it this year, but they transferred $615,000. Mississippi Valley Health Services, which is the 13-county collaboration, which, just to remind you, saves La Crosse County $1 million a year that we would have levied before for the operation of Lakeview. It was the first ever partnership statewide. There are two other consortiums that are following our lead. And again, that was a team effort of Human Services, Lakeview, Bill Shepard's leadership, Andy Phillips. But it saves us $1 million a year by putting that commission together.
Supervisor Flood.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Okay, I either forgot or I was missing some time. What is the Western Wisconsin CARES clients issue that we have?
Okay, I shared with you that one of the things that happened over the last year and a half, we made a decision that we would, in order to maintain client economies of scale, that we would accept Western Wisconsin CARES clients. At the time that we lifted that moratorium, they only had 11 clients in Lakeview.
That's right.
It since grew to 28 and more than doubled over that period of time. And the state, in their infinite wisdom, won't let Western Wisconsin CARES pay that per diem of $59 or $57, and it dumps all the way back on La Crosse County. Okay. So we have no case management, no responsibility for the new number of clients. And, in fact, the state used to think we didn't need nursing homes anymore. But lo and behold, all of a sudden they find Lakeview, and they're essential to the placement for those clients. So we're in an ongoing debate with Department of Health Services and the new administration on trying to battle that issue to get them to at least pay the same per diem as other member counties instead of transferring the cost back to us.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chairperson.
Supervisor Hampson.
So just to clarify, they do pay for other WWC clients from other counties.
Exactly.
It's just La Crosse County clients that they won't pay for.
Right. And what's interesting is they play games with where somebody's residence is. Someone that has never lived in La Crosse County but came from Monroe County, for example, all of a sudden, lo and behold, once they were over here, they became a La Crosse County.
Because they live in Lakeview.
Because they live in West Salem. So it's a very difficult issue.
Yeah, it's
but the
been
good news is, while we continue to battle on that and try to get some reason with the State Department, is that MVHS has allowed us to have some funding to help hold the line on our actual costs for those clients. Again, sorry to go on so long about that issue, but I like to do the pie chart. So again, to remind you, most people don't understand or don't immediately recognize that we've got a very large budget, $134 million, but the tax levy is only a relatively small portion of that, roughly 22-23% of that entire gross budget. But we do a whole lot of things in the community, a whole lot of services, but the tax levy is not a clear indication of the gross expenditures. Roughly a quarter of our entire budget is human services, less than around 14% is courts and public safety, et cetera, et cetera. Our largest portion of the budget is actually health, aging, and the two nursing homes, but the majority of those costs are not paid for by the property tax. So if you go to the actual tax levy, your property taxpayers, your constituents in your districts, the vast majority of our budget are supporting state-mandated or state-regulated or state-imposed services in one way, shape, or form in human services, courts, and public safety. Again, that's not just a value judgment, but it is an area that we tend to have less control over. We tend to have less impact on, and the state can tell us more what to do. But it also allows you to recognize the relative impact of human services, courts, and public safety on our taxpayers. Another slide that I included from last year was just to point out that the state budget does recognize that new construction, new customers, is a way for stabilizing the cost of services to our existing taxpayers. Again, over the last 10 years, roughly 43% of tax increase costs was supported by new construction. We didn't rely on that this year, but I thought I'd just include that as a reference, because then going forward, I just want to remind everybody that once the recession hit, we've been doing everything we can to work within the structure. So since the recession started in 2007, the lowest increases that we've had in cost doing everything we can have been over the last five budgets. Again, this is not adjusted for new construction, as the earlier one indicated. The only increase in 2010-2011 was for debt service, and of course this year we're proposing a budget that brings everything at zero, and so there should actually be some savings in addition to that. However, we need to recognize that when equalized value, when total market value in the county is declining, even when you have a zero from 2011 to 2012, the tax rate goes up, right? Because if you're asking for the same amount of money and the total value of property that you're taxing to do that, the rate goes up. But again, the 387 is lower than at any point since 10 years ago. So I think that's still positive that we've been able to do as much as we can with the budgets that we've been working with. So let's talk about debt. One of the largest issues that we deal with is trying to maintain debt service. Again, I've said it probably too many times. One of our difficult parts is paying for the old law enforcement center at the same time that we're taking on new debt for the new law enforcement center. This year, my plan had been that there's one part of the old law enforcement center called the 2001A LEC debt. The original idea was, with interest rates as low as they are, the remaining principal is $3.5 million, and 4 years remaining on that debt, 12 through 15, that we could have saved about $259,000 or $65,000 a year by refinancing, dropping the interest rates we are paying from 4.5% to 1.6. Pretty good chunk of money, I think, and we're really looking at it closely. With some of the discussions that the city had in delaying when they went to the market, it caused us to relook at some of our choices, so it gave us a little bit of pause, and we went back and thought, now wait a second, if we can figure out a way to pay off the balance at the end of 2012 in the new year with 3 years early by using the 2012 debt service reserve for the bond, plus the extra debt levy saved because of spreading out the new LEC bond issues and the project savings. Remember, we saved over $300,000 from the construction of the new LEC. At the end, we had an extra $300,000 that we hadn't spent out of what was originally allocated. We could do all of that and pay off everything early rather than refinancing and having bond issuance costs. And instead of $259,000, we could save $364,000 and pay it all off earlier. And I'm going to walk you through the details of that. It holds the line on the total county debt levy in 2012, so we don't raise taxes at all to do that, and puts us in a position then by 2013 where our actual total debt payment is down about $3.3 million, $3.4 million a year, and may give us some room, if we want to stay within this existing levy that we've been doing, to at least do some of the capital projects that we have. So that's the recommendation that we're bringing you, and I've revised a couple of the charts. You'll remember this one, slightly different scale, but the same numbers if you refer to last year. 2011, we held the line at 3.97. If we would stay with the existing debt service without applying any reserves, without doing any refinancing, our debt would climb to 4.3, 4.3, 4.4, and then start to drop. Again, the blue part of the bar is the old LEC. The burgundy or Maroon color is the LEC addition. The proposed budget actually shows us doing a great deal of debt service in 2012, actually paying off debt early, 4 years early, and then that brings our debt service down to 3.4, and we will only be levying 3.97. The detail on that is that while we're paying off $7.1 million and only levying debt of $3.9, we have debt reserves that we've been lucky enough that now the LEC project is closed out. Let me walk through the very specific details of that. The balance available in the debt service fund is $1.4 million. It includes the four items that are off to the left there, $445,000, which was an unexpected bond premium. When we sold the bonds, one of the ways that the bidder got the bid and was low was to actually provide a premium to us up front. We couldn't spend that for any other purpose. We kept that in debt reserve, and we knew we could use this later on to reduce debt. 2008, 2009, and 2010, we actually had savings in the debt reserve because we delayed how long it took before we actually borrowed the money. We levied a tax as if we were going to have to make the full payment, and by stretching out and not issuing all of our debt at once, we spread it out in several issues, if you remember, some from state trust fund, from in small amounts, and then that final one. So we ended up actually incurring less payments over that period of time than we had levied for. Can't spend it for anything else but debt. We knew that we would come back and look at this later, but we saved more than we had expected, mainly because of that bond premium. In addition to that, our extra year prior service reserve is also there. We can use that to lower that amount so that our total debt service fund can apply $1.7 million. Then we also add the LEC construction savings. Again, we saved $328,000 on the project, and we have an additional reserve called the jail assessment fund that we've always been saving back for dealing with this. There's about a million, what's the total amount in that? $1,091,000, and we don't have a specific project other than paying off debt for that, so we are recommending using all of these funds to pay off the entire $3.5 million, along with levying the first payment for 2001 in for the 2001A in calendar year 2012, make only the April interest payment, and we'll end up lowering our overall debt and being in a much better position. So again, we're doing this without raising taxes. We're using it by managing our reserves because in a higher interest environment, you might want to keep those reserves, right? Because you could invest them at a higher rate than what you're paying. But when you're paying 4.5% interest and making less than 1% on reserves, it caused us to come back and say, no, let's rethink this. Because now we're closing out the entire LEC. The project, the capital project will be fully closed out on the books by the end of this year. So let's relook at all this. So rather than go through all the rigmarole of refinancing, let's use what we've got, which is the strength of our reserves, to lower our indebtedness, because going into the new year, the new board is going to deal with three very large capital issues that they're going to have to confront, and there are no easy answers. We just heard Ron's presentation. Ongoing capital road needs will continue to challenge us in how we finance those. The Lakeview, do I have that on my next one? Yeah, that's actually on the... I'll come back to the large capital needs because they're Lakeview, this building, and roads. This also compares that total debt levy rate, the portion of the debt or of the rate that's actually for debt, and you can always get that very easily if you want to go to just the front cover page, which shows that the debt rate is 52 cents. Which is the most current. We've kept that flat. That's actually the average that we had for a number of years. You can see that earlier years we were as high as 91 cents. Back in 92 we were 78 cents. But we're actually in a position that we'll be able to hold the line on that debt rate even with the declining value by paying off debt. And in 2013 then that rate should drop maybe closer to, if you look at the yellow sheet, in the lower left-hand corner of the second page of the yellow sheet, it'll get us closer to the 44 cents as a debt rate. Now, my suggestion will be that we look at that kind of savings and try to figure out what the highest priority capital expense is and develop a debt plan on that.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. With the refinance, or at least utilizing the reserves for paying off the current debt, and on the surface, it certainly makes sense to save 4.5%, or at least save a net 3.5%.
Right.
What's that going to do to our reserves for when and if the interest rates go up for borrowing?
I'll ask Gary to respond more specifically, but make sure you understand this is debt service reserves that's independent of the general fund,
yeah.
That's independent of the health of the undesignated human services fund. Again, and it can only be used for debt retirement or capital. It cannot be used for any other purpose. So that was the purpose that money is there for.
That's it cannot be used for future debt then.
Future debt will be at such a lower interest rate that any future debt that you would want to issue for roads or this building will be, on, in general, a lower interest rate. In fact, one could advocate, and you've heard some in the political environment say, this is the time for governments to borrow. It's the lowest interest rates we're going to see for infrastructure. It's the lowest cost of borrowing money that we've seen Heck, in my 25-year career, I've never seen rates this low for capital projects for the government. But we're not ready to make those decisions because we still don't want to raise taxes to pay for it. So, again, this is money that can only be used for debt. To incur new debt and then pay it off with the reserve, I think is...
Okay.
It's complicated, but
yeah.
We've already levied this. We know we've got an incurred item, which is a 4.5%. It's callable because we can pay it off right now, and it's the simplest to do because until we come back with a plan and the new board debates the big three items that I'm going to talk about in a moment, I don't think we have consensus, and this keeps our debt levy the same and gets us over a bit of the hump, which is paying two law enforcement centers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, back to that analogy.
But it just in general means that any future debt that we take out then we'll have to find sources of funding the costs, the financing for any future debt. And we're banking, based on this, on interest rates staying low.
Well, and
or bond sales price.
Gary, you want to help me here?
A couple of things. In any given month, we have probably about $75 million invested, okay? So this $3.5 million is only about 5% of our investment portfolio. Additionally, the auditors have pointed out to us that we cannot sit on that money on debt reserve for a long period of time. They've highly encouraged, they've been highly supportive of us using that now to pay off debt.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to note that Gary's answer was a lot shorter than Mr. O'Malley's answer. I'm just noting it. That's all.
I make enough that I think I get paid by the word sometimes, so it's just okay. And that guy hasn't said anything all night. What tripped his trigger? Okay. So for 2012, the only debt issuance that we will be recommending is an additional 5-year highway note, much like we've done each of the last 2 years, for $2.1 million. Again, the interest rates will be for that issue. We'll find out. I think we're actually selling the bonds for the 2011. You'll get an idea of that kind of rate. It'll probably be in the 1.6, 1.7. We will sell that 2012 next year at this time, but the Fed seems to indicate that they're going to hold interest rates low for at least the next 2 years. So again, that's not good for our interest investments, but it's certainly good for us to use the strategy that we've been doing of using highway fund balance to make debt payments to stretch out the cost and get as much road work done as we can. Ron talked a lot about that. The biggest needs that we're going to have in 2013 and beyond are highway needs, the administrative center remodeling or replacement, and the Lakeview facility needs. You're going to hear more about what our options are in the new year with the Lakeview facility. If you remodel it, the Aging Long-Term Care Committee knows that we did a study back in 2008 indicating that remodeling the building would be about $9.5 million. The cost would be mostly reimbursed within the depreciation schedule of how nursing nursing care is provided and nursing is paid for through Medicaid. However, it would not allow for any new upgrades. So you wouldn't have private rooms, which is what the clients expect these days. You wouldn't have private utilities, private restrooms, and those types of things. So, and at the same time, you'd have to remodel while people are living and working and being in the facility, which is not very easy. When you redo a whole heating and ventilating system, you can't just say, okay, you go sit out here on the lawn for 6 months while we redo that. We do the electrical. You can't have people go back to Hillview and stay with somebody else. It's a very difficult challenge. Building a new facility might run as much as $24 million. These are just guesstimates. That's not a perfect estimate. 150-bed facility. It would allow us to build a facility that would have private rooms. Some counties are doing that, but it would require a lot of local levy, a lot of local debt service, because the reimbursement doesn't pay much for more than the $9.5 million level. So again, that's not an easy decision by the board. The other concept that many that a number of counties are looking at, Dunn County in particular, has gotten approval for three smaller 50-bed facilities. They actually reimburse the capital expenses better, and they do a incentive on your operating costs. They can be more efficient to smaller facilities, and they give you almost a bonus in your reimbursement on paying for the staffing. So again, this is going to get very complicated, but as you can see, the list of wish list, if you will, or the needs list, exceeds our ability to probably come up with easy ways to pay. The new board is really going to get into understanding and dealing with debt, debt management, capital expenses, and a lot more detail than we've been doing in previous years. And you'll end up understanding those goldenrod pages better than you have before on what we're actually effectively doing with your investment and your property taxpayers' investment. So that's going to be an ongoing issue for us. I talked about the position changes within the budget coming through the executive committee this week and coming to the county board next Thursday. Is a resolution showing a net decrease by over five positions of FTE, excluding the separate resolution on economic support regionalization. In human services, because of the way they're doing improved customer service and one single point of entry, they're adding two social services specialists while they're eliminating two clerks. Different responsibilities, different set of requirements, Jason's been talking with the Health and Human Services Board about that. The only place that we're actually adding a net position in this recommended budget is the scale attendant at Solid Waste. They're also offsetting part of that by a decrease in a seasonal position in hazardous waste. It is an increased level of service because we're getting so much more volume there. We're going, Hank just shared with us at Public Works, we're currently going from an average of about 100 trucks a day to 150 trucks a day. Because of our use of incentives, our use of our rebate program, we're actually needing to be more responsive to our public and to our customers there, and so we need to have additional staff to actually meet their needs. There's obviously enough revenue within Solid Waste to pay for that. In Highway, Ron was a team player enough to, as we had two retirements at Highway, he's analyzed the workload, and it's his opinion, and he supports my recommendation to eliminate two vacant positions in Highway. Highway has been one of the largest helpers of reducing levy and helping us balance this budget. In Sheriff, one of the difficult parts is that while every department does everything they can to control operating costs to as low as possible, the only increase in Sheriff's patrol is gas. Everything else has held the line, but if we don't do a cut in Sheriff's department, it means every other department has to make it up. So I've met with the sheriff and proposed that in this budget we eliminate one full patrol deputy halfway through the year. That would be the vacancy that's created by the Tricia Stratman vacancy that is a vacant position. We most likely will be revisiting this issue in the 2013 budget. The sheriff is a cooperative team player. At the same time, he, like anybody else, would not want to lose a position if we can find any other way to do that, but I've budgeted for that. The other thing that you need to know, and I'll talk about it in the WRS, is we are budgeting for, and we will ask the bargaining unit for patrol deputies to pay 5.9% towards their retirement, just like other employees. We do not have an agreement on that. If we do not get an agreement at the bargaining table, that will be a subject to arbitration. Other counties are doing the same type of strategy, saying if it's good enough for all the other employees, it should be good enough for patrol. But if we don't win that, we have to make that up within the budget as well, and I'll show you that number in a moment. So a number of issues that impact law enforcement. In finance, again, internal service departments have been reexamining, as we did with IT, the level of staffing. In finance, we've examined and believe that we should be able to start providing some means of cost savings in our purchasing area. This will be a difficult decision for one person. It would be cutting back a position from full-time to 0.8 halfway through the year. Excuse me. And then the most difficult one was the one that I wrestled with for a long time, which is downsizing of home health, 2.4 positions. Home health has been a please go ahead.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the staffing, aren't we looking somewhere at 4 to 6 positions to open the second pod in the jail?
Those have already been added and are in the facility. No, we are not budgeting to add more. We are going to have to get by without opening up that pod, as the sheriff shared with you at the last meeting.
So we will not be opening the second pod?
Unless we can find a way to staff medical receiving differently with only one position down there. We've put both of those positions, the sheriff has put both of those positions down there. As of today, the census was 179 male and 20 female, so we're getting by. We're not able to staff that. You would have to come up with actually 6 positions to open up that, 6 FTEs to open up that other pod.
I think he said actually 5 because they can do a share, but yeah, somewhere in that 250 to yeah. 300,000.
I'm not going to quibble about okay. one position, but there was no way I could, with cutting every other department, justify adding that much more operating levy to that area, especially when we're getting by. Doesn't mean that's a good long-term solution, but that's where it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. However, in home health, we've had... Thank you. I'm sorry. I get choked up when I talk about money. I'm sure you do, too. The ongoing issue, and this has been an ongoing challenge for many years in La Crosse County, is the operation of the home health division. And it's become more and more challenging. I've illustrated for you, if you went back through the last several budgets and notice what we are levying, which is the actual budget, and then see what ended up happening at the end once we closed out the books, you'd see that the actual amount of expense in home health has doubled from $124,000 in 2006 to 2010 at $252,000. We have no other part of the budget that's growing at that rate, no other amount of levy that's growing at that rate. So it's been an ongoing challenge trying to figure out how we take control of that. Going into the budget cycle, I thought I needed to be in the position to actually eliminate and phase out home health entirely. Finance, home health, and the health department got together and revisited this. Even downsizing or eliminating home health would have cost us about $100,000 in levy next year. We are bringing you a budget that will hold home health next year by resizing and downsizing the type of clients that we serve to $110,000. I did see one hand, but I wanted to walk through the details of this so you understand. Maybe I'm going to answer your question as I present.
Supervisor Geary.
The clients they serve, are they mainly in urban or rural areas?
They are throughout the entire county, and that is one of the issues, is that by downsizing and saying we can't serve everybody, we will downsize by about a quarter and relocate with other providers. Mainly they're Western Wisconsin CARES clients, by the way, and they don't provide a good level of reimbursement for our true costs. We will set a limit at the number of visits we can do per week. The type of client that requires more than that, we would not be in that business. We'll ask Western Wisconsin CARES to provide that service through other care providers and deal with that. We're actually bringing to Health and Human Services Board tomorrow night, and there may end up being a resolution that comes back to the board redefining the focus of home health, what the benchmarks are that we're going to monitor to make sure that we live within this on a monthly basis in the number of visits, the amount of revenue, and actually controlling that. But it will involve reducing the amount of client revenue we receive and reducing the amount of staff that we have devoted to this area by 2.4 FTEs. I'm going to get into that in a moment. But the next 3 months we'll be working with clients, working with the public, and working with families to recognize and make the transition to other providers for about a quarter of our clients, while we're also reassuring the existing clients that are going to stay with the system and continue to work with this. Home care is a non-mandated service. Only 10 counties still provide that. I still think it's a viable service if we're able to have specific benchmarks and be able to monitor to that and not try to provide service to anyone and everyone, but to provide that level of service and to have a specific way to monitor performance. The other point that's in the next slide that I'd like to reemphasize is this was done with finance and management and the health department together. There are three positions that will be cut specifically and others that will be changed. Two positions that are vacant will be eliminated, but we're starting right at the top. The supervisor will go from full-time or 0.9 to half-time, and we need to do everything we can to support that decision, both in health administration and finance, to make sure that we're not having her work more than half-time being a supervisor, and to be fair to her, but the cut is happening at management first. In addition to that, medical records technician will be decreased from 0.8 to 0.5. I'm one of the home health aides, in matching the number of visits that we will no longer have will be decreased by half. By the way, this is not just an impact in hours. This impacts their benefits. This is a substantial impact to three individual people, and they're going to be needing to make decisions on how they deal with that. But to recognize that County Ide, our supervisor, has been one of the champions of this area, helped us relook at these numbers. She's one of the ones taking the biggest hit to make this happen and to preserve the program into next year. So, again, this has been an ongoing challenge, but if we can control the levy to be within that $100,000 for that service, I still think we have a vital role to play. Gunderson Lutheran is getting out of the home health business, and there may be some private pay clients that pay better than the rates that we can get through Medicaid. We're going to preserve our Medicare licensing, even though we the Medicare clients tend to cost more, so we're going to be much more selective in what we're doing. But there is no easy answer. We've been trying to control this cost for quite a while. We met with the employees. By the way, you're not the first to hear this. I have met with the leadership of the county board, Tara, Sharon, Jill Billings from Health and Human Services Board, just so they knew that we were dealing with this. But we've met with the employees both individually, personally, so they knew what was happening, as well as a whole lot of work went into this area. You will get a resolution that will talk about 2.4 decrease in home health, and you'll see a resolution or the budget that will actually deal with this. But this is the kind of human impact that kept me awake at nights. I'll tell you, when I was looking at the idea of decreasing and eliminating 8 positions in this economy, it made me sick to my stomach. But I think this is a viable chance for us to be able to do this and still be able to preserve some level of services.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. So in order to have the home health services, do people have to meet any form of income requirements or so that we're not saving people who could afford to be private pays?
There will actually be an outline, and I don't have all the details in front of me, but we will be having some private pay that pay at a higher rate. We'll have some Western Wisconsin Cares which have to qualify by income because, in fact, that means they're Medicaid, and then there's also some non-Western Wisconsin Cares Medicaid clients. So we're going to try to zero in on the sweet spot of the people that we're used to serving, but keep enough room that when we get a private pay client that's willing to pay more, that we can accommodate that, but not go above 31 to 32 clients per year at any given time. So we're going to come back to that as we walk through that with the Health and Human Services Board, and most likely on a regular monthly or bi-monthly basis report back to them on how that's working.
And so potentially then with reducing those kind of services, some of the people may need to go into assisted living then or other forms of...
Actually, most of the home health, we did examine that. Could that be a part of the continuum of care for Hillview? But most of these people find ways to stay in their home. And the Western Wisconsin Cares, which is, again, the majority of the client management that's there, actually makes the decision to keep them in their home. The difference is Western Wisconsin Cares, the market does not reimburse for our level of compensation and benefits. There are other providers in the in the marketplace now that have come in at much lower benefits, much lower pay, just like daycare for kids. You know, somehow the market has made a decision to pay people less, pay less benefits, and so there are two or three other providers in the community that provide this service for less. But rather than make a whole sea change, if we can hit our market, the people that we're best at serving, with this level of levy, and continue to serve those people. Some of them have been long-time La Crosse County clients, and not make a drastic change, but control the levy and cut it from the $250,000 per year to $110,000 per year. I think that's a huge success for the taxpayers. It preserves jobs, preserves continuity of care for some of those individuals. So we will be changing some care providers with Western Wisconsin Cares for some clients, but not the majority.
Thank you.
Supervisor Burns. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it safe to assume that as people retire, this could even be downsized more?
That's actually part of the vacancies. The RN vacancy was a retirement and gave us an opportunity to relook, depending on what happens in the future. And ultimately, retirements may happen or other vacancies may happen, but it's more critical that we control the cost. That if we can manage to that benchmark of $110,000 divided by 12 months, that's the most critical thing. That explosion in 4 years of doubling of levy is the real
And you
problem.
Said there's roughly 32 clients?
32, 33, that would be, it's up over 40 right now, so we're going to reduce to
So then we're going to subsidize those 30-somethings $3,000 a piece, roughly.
Per month for the number of services. I'd rather have more details to show you that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But at this rate right now, to be able to cut a levy-supported service from $250 a year to $110,000, I think is a huge success and allows us to preserve a level of service we're providing for most people. Anything additional? Again, that will come through in the resolution. We'll probably talk more about that. And then you will also see a resolution on position changes due to the economic support regionalization. It will have no tax levy impact. The Income Maintenance Consortium will be with seven other counties, Buffalo, Clark, Jackson, Monroe, Pepin, Tremplo, and Vernon. Certain functions on administration, client changes, registration will be centralized in La Crosse County. So some of the positions will actually be reduced in other counties while we will be adding here in La Crosse County. Again, paid for by state and federal revenues. It will add one economic support supervisor, two clerk positions, and one economic support clerk. I'm not sure I understand the difference between a clerk and an economic support clerk, but hopefully Jason will be able to explain that to you when that comes through. Madam Chair.
Supervisor Flood.
Thank you. The new positions, are they going to be taken from the pool of people in the other counties who will lose positions? Or
I believe they will be able to apply, and there will also be there may actually be other people within our system that are losing hours that may apply.
Okay.
Just a reminder to everybody, any of the union positions that are impacted are still covered under collective bargaining, seniority, bumping, all those types of things.
Yeah.
So we will continue to work with, if there are qualified people from other counties, I know Jason and Lori will work with them to see if there's a place to do that.
All right,
but there
you.
Are also some retirements and some of those things that happen in this as well. So those are the position changes that are going on. Then some of the other things that I thought you'd be most interested in the overall budget, we worked with the new county board chair in developing the county board budget. I already had a supervisor ask me in detail what was going on in the county board budget. Oh, she left. Because she had noticed a couple of different line items. And let me go to that page so you can just follow along with me, even though I've given you a summary. Page 3. Some of the biggest changes are that obviously we're decreasing from 35 to 29 supervisors. So without changing compensation at all, that saves $18,000. The definition for qualifying for Wisconsin retirement actually changed with the state budget bill in that you have to, if you had 600 hours as an employee, you could qualify for Wisconsin retirement. Now it's 1,200 hours. We had a hard time calculating that the county board chair is required to put in 1,200 hours. So in talking with Tara about this, and also the board chair would have been required to pay WRS. So we eliminated WRS for the board chair, and that ends up saving some money in the new after the April election, and actually right now because of the definition of part-time. The board chair, Terrace, proposed that there only be, for the new county board chair in April, only receive the payment for county board chair, not to receive, in addition to that, the supervisor pay. Each of you receive roughly $3,800 a year. The board chair receives just over $15,240. So with the new election, the new board chair with this budget would only receive that pay, would not receive the pay as a board member. That allows then, obviously, with all of those savings, to provide the same annual raise included in this budget of 2% that's being budgeted for employees. They're getting a 2% raise, at least under the union contracts. You'll have to consider non-union separately. You've gone through the last term without any raise, so this allows to use the savings in supervisor pay because of downsizing to actually provide a small raise. There's also a net savings in WRS due to the chair's assistant, and then you'll see a line item that seemed to grow quite a bit, which is dues, which is why I'm directing you to page 3. Andrea asked about this. That's not because we're spending more on dues. It's because we consolidated all dues into one line item. For whatever reason, historically, WCA dues used to be partially spread out to the health department, highway, human services, and mostly was in the county board budget. I had never changed that. I don't know. It didn't seem like a real big issue. But for accountability purposes, WCA dues are not going up. They're all in one place, but it's all in one budget. So we're not going to spend more for those dues. It's all in one budget. But if you notice, the total county board budget under the proposed recommendation goes down from $326,000 to $309,000 is the actual levy. So those are the changes that were in the county board budget. Again, they ended up in the administrator's budget, but I worked with Tara to accommodate what, and she gave us direction, Ginny and I, on what could happen within the recommended budget. So again, this is not necessarily the debate time. I'm just trying to give you an overview. If you want to debate it, go ahead. I won't stop it.
Supervisor Geary.
No, I don't want to debate it. The pay raise for the supervisors will have to come in as a separate resolution in November, so right. We'll deal with them. But on the supervisory pay for the board chair, I wouldn't do it that way. I'd reduce it from the board chair. I think everybody's a supervisor, and when you get elected, you take out your papers, and there's a compensation attached to it. So I'm just saying, dollar-wise, it wouldn't matter, but I think it should come off the other one, because what if somebody who was the board chair didn't want to give it up? I mean, when you take out your papers, this is what the office pays. You can't say, if you get to be board chair, you lose that, because there's nowhere when you take out your papers would it say that.
Well, we'll look at the legal issues with Bill. Thanks for raising that. But that was our intent. That's what's in the line items of the budget. And we'll look at so that that's addressed in the resolution that establishes pay. Just wanted you to understand the details when you saw why the changes happened monetarily. So that's a good point. Bill, if you'd add that to how would we structure that and what would the resolution look like to accomplish the principle of what was proposed, if not the letter of the detail. Other items with that? I just thought you'd be interested in the county board portions. This is just a reminder that the fees and charges master list will be coming to you this week. Frank in finance is finishing that. It's just a reminder that they're categorized by whether or not they're set by state, set by county, or set by both. Most have not changed, except I want to highlight a few of the following that did change in there, and there's also some detail that's attached. You should have in your in the separate summaries, we have again a summary of the indirect costs that are there and the changes that were made there. You'll notice that we've increased indirect costs charged back to departments by about $128,000. The largest increases were in Hillview Healthcare Center. What we tried to do was relatively or roughly equalize that with Lakeview. You notice that we charged $300,000 Though we could charge more to Lakeview, about half of that is generated by La Crosse County MVHS members, and half is generated by other counties. So we thought if we gave rough parity to what we are charging to Hillview for internal services, as we do to our own La Crosse County portion of the Lakeview, that is the biggest increase, to go from $56,000 to $150,000. Other increases, of course, you can see 2011 budget for MPO went to $12,000. It had not been increased in a number of years. Child support was as much as we could increase it. Et cetera, et cetera. So we went down through that. We increased library closer to, but not at full recovery. Solid waste is at full recovery. Household hazardous materials is at full recovery. So I'm sure we'll have a discussion about that. That's included in the user fees. If you want to go to, in this handout, I've actually broken out the detail, and there are actually two pages that give you a comparison. The first page is last year's comparison of all of the changes in any type of user fee that happened, and I pointed out that most of that $900,000 was in outside entities, probation, parole paying rent, Mississippi Valley Health Services, Human Services Care Center, that type of thing. And we did a similar outline to show you the 2012 over 2011. A much smaller change in number of fees, but I'll walk you through that if you want to look at that page. It looks like this, 2012 over 2011. In detail, the biggest change in health was, of course, that there are a number of revenues that are down there, but the main one is home health client visits. We're budgeting to serve less clients. We will have less revenue, but we will also levy less, as I talked about. Register of deeds, their recording fees are quite a bit lower, about $45,000 less revenue. Justice sanctions and chemical health, both in monitoring and in the clinical client fees, are actually down. So in two areas, we are receiving less. So it's not just justice sanctions clients. It's also in client revenues in chemical health. In aging, our contributions and donations are down at our congregate meal sites and our home-delivered meals. And then law enforcement service of papers are down. And then a number of other minor changes. The biggest increase in revenues are in medical examiner. Volume of cremations is increasing, so it's increasing that volume source. And then, of course, the new morgue fee, we're expecting to generate some additional revenue. Jail and concessions and commissions are down, but calling card use is increasing, so it's really meeting the needs of inmates, but it will generate us additional revenue. Interest on taxes, obviously delinquencies are up, and delinquent taxes are increasing their payments to us as they're bringing it up to date. That's not an increase in a rate. We haven't changed the fees any. We're charging the same fee as every other county, but just the number of delinquencies is generating more interest for us. Indirect cost, of course, I just explained. And then finally, Mississippi Valley Health Services, they transferred $615,000 to us from that reserve, and we're using $315,000 to stabilize the levy for clients from La Crosse County. So you see that detail, and then the last two that I want to share with you is you've asked for. This is one detailed sheet. Your eyes will, you'll probably want your reading glasses for this, but you asked to see what the detailed levy savings is of the WRS cost shift. If you look at the gross budget savings and just go to the bottom line, the budgeted amount of WRS savings before you consider the 2% raise, which is within the bounds of the budget repair bill, saves a gross amount of $2.9 million. Offset by a raise of $1 million, you should save, if it was just gross savings, $1.9 million. But we ordered this in the way departments actually pay levy. So if you look at just the bottom of the page, if you go over to net tax levy savings, none of the following departments, even though employees now have to pay WRS, and they still get a raise, which reduces some of that savings to the budget, household hazardous materials, economic development, MPO, Carroll Heights, Hillview Terrace, Hillview, Lakeview, and solid waste, none of those require direct levy support. The exception is that household hazardous materials does have levy support, but by having the employee pay it, it doesn't reduce the tax levy because, again, the contract with the municipalities is that the county will levy $1 per capita. So even though the employees charged to that area will pay some WRS, we can't lower the tax levy because we're contractually committed to that. You have
Supervisor Feehan.
Audrey, you're looking for the sheet? It's the last sheet, and it's in big type. I didn't want you to have to look at a tiny
small
thing.
Type.
In small type. I wanted you to actually have the detail. And just one second, Mr. Feehan. Just above that, then, are the group of departments where it's a mixed bag, where we don't save 100%, but we save quite a bit. And that's where we are off in our initial estimates. We were thinking when we first did this that we'd save probably 45 to 48% of the savings would be levy. It turns out by the end of the budget that it's about 59%. And here's where it was different. Health came in at about half, just like we said. Human Services was actually able to, other than economic support, use much more of the savings than we had expected, actually reducing levy within their area. So I separated those departments, or actually Mary helped me separate them in this worksheet, so you could see those kind of departments that see not full savings. Everything above that line, 100% of the WRS net savings is tax levy support and tax savings. So I know a number of board members wanted to see this level of detail, and if you looked at any individual budget and followed the retirement line item, you would actually see these kinds of numbers, especially for the smaller departments. The bigger departments we've lumped all into the one line item for that whole department so you could have one sheet.
Thank you for your patience, Supervisor Feehan. Now you have the floor.
Thank you. So if I'm understanding, what you're saying is that it reduces the budget costs by 2.9 million, but because funding for those departments comes from other sources other than the tax levy, it's not a tax levy savings, but it will reduce the budget cost for those departments.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And it will help preserve those departments' budgets for other purposes, but just not levy savings.
Thank you.
And then I wanted to be able to translate to the, what does that mean if you go to the last page then, and this is my concluding slide and concluding information for you, is that on the left-hand side are the major 2012 budget challenges that we've had. I've highlighted and probably spent enough time with you talking about that the biggest impacts to us, of course, are state budget cuts. Shared revenue, general transportation aids, courts, child support, victim witness, and youth aids. But there are also other budget problems that are happening for us as well that were not caused by the state or federal government, that are just things that are happening economically. There were changes in the child support waiver that impact the revenue to the Human Services Department, which is a federal change. The care center deficit has cost us more than we had expected. Alcohol and other drug abuse client revenue is down by about $70,000. General fund interest revenue is one of the largest decreases, and if you go to non-departmental or 1064, you'll end up seeing that we are not generating as much interest as we had expected, and we can't rely on that, and that's one of the biggest changes in our revenue items. Register of Deeds is down by a total of $75,000 overall, and the growth in Western Wisconsin CARES clients. So we, going into this budget, had about a $2.9 million hole. The way we needed to be able to address that was, on the right-hand side, the net levy savings after WRS by employees that affect the levy, offering a 2% raise, which we're committed to within the union contracts, only saves $1.1 million. And that was my point, was that a lot of the state budget cuts, while the tools are helping us deal with it because of the mix of type of services we have and the employees that we have, we aren't saving dollar for dollar everything that was cut. So we had to come up with other items. You know the story about the juvenile detention facility and the need to downsize that area. That will help us to the tune of a net of $426,000, both in the downsizing of JDF as well as the alternative services. Now, we're actually seeing good sales tax revenue. It's surprising. When you go to the 1064, you'll notice that we budgeted $9.5 million this year. We're budgeting $9.7 million. And frankly, the months this year are coming in better than any of the initial 7 months of any year previously. So I'm not expecting that to continue to grow. We're expecting it to level off, but that's actually helping us go into the new year, that we will add back to that excess fund balance just a little bit if things continue through the end of the year, because generally the end of the year is actually better than the early part of the year. So we're relying on the $200,000, the increase in indirect costs that I talked about, interest on taxes. Facilities was able to cut back on the budget for utilities because they've been conserving in that area. The net position savings to levy is $395,000. That entire list of cutbacks and decrease of FTEs will save almost $400,000 in levy, medical examiner revenue, contribution by WWC, jail concessions, and other many smaller changes. Again, this doesn't balance perfectly, except that it shows the majority of solutions ended up offsetting. It wasn't enough from the WRS savings, but it obviously helped get to that item. You also have other summaries in here that I won't go into right now on outside agencies. And then, of course, each year we do a detailed summary for you of your entire comprehensive annual financial report, of undesignated fund balances, and the detailed green sheet, which shows you sales tax. So I can see that I've outstayed my welcome, and we've kept you here for 2.5 hours, but we had a lot of information. I hope you find it useful and helpful as you start to deliberate this budget, but I want to point out that we think we've brought you the best and most conservative budget we've been able to bring you in a long time. It was a lot of work by a whole lot of folks throughout this organization, and it also positions us better for the future to deal with many of the capital items without raising property taxes one dime.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley, and to the staff who have been working for months on this. I would also note that you had help keeping us here till 8:30. On a normal night, I might blame you for the whole 2.5 hours, but you had some help tonight. And next will be, well, this week, committee by committee, you're looking at specific details within your departmental budgets that will continue. So if you're needing more detail, it's not because it's not being made available to you. And if you're interested, this would definitely be a month to attend a committee meeting of a committee you don't serve on, so you can learn more about budgets if you're interested. Suggestions for future agenda items. Supervisor Geary.
Well, one came to mind when that presentation about us by, not us, Gunderson Lutheran, bought their engine out of Austria. Obviously, we didn't pay for it, but I know a TV, one of the channels, been running about Buy American. I don't know if we need a resolution coming out of a committee, a discussion at a planning meeting in the future, but I want to get some kind of teeth in something that says, with our tax dollars, we buy American. So whatever mechanism you got to get that going, I don't care if it's committee or here.
Well, we'll have to do that within the confines of legislation that was passed recently that to some extent precludes us from doing that, although I know that there are other units of local government who seem to have gotten around that by talking about local spending. So that might be an issue. Supervisor Geary and Supervisor Doyle, maybe you two could work together on this. drafting a resolution or an ordinance for the board to consider. I'm not sure it has to be part of the budget process per se, but it should probably make its way through executive committee and or legislative committee. Supervisor Doyle.
What I was trying to explain to Supervisor Geary was that
Thank you for sharing with the rest of us now.
Well, I'm doing it now. I believe our corporation counsel will tell us that we have to follow state bidding rules, which would not allow us to simply say we're going to buy American. If I'm incorrect, please advise me, but I think that's how the law works.
So we'll task Supervisors Doyle and Geary to work with staff on that. Supervisor Feehan.
Well, I would just like to say that I am very happy to hear that Administrator O'Malley is becoming more conservative and that he was conservative in this budget proposal. So thank you for that, and I move to adjourn.
been moved by Supervisor Fee and seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are adjourned.